Mr. Richardson on the phone. Mr. Richardson, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, good evening. Happy Wacky Wednesday, sir.
Well, thank you very much.
Welcome to the Breakfast Club. So glad you could make it tonight.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. And also, if anybody would like to call in to the show, the call-in number is 828-414-8100. That number again is 828-414-8100. And with that said, I'm just going to jump on in with the big nine at nine and let our guest introduce himself with the first question, which is, who are you?
Wow, that is such a loaded question.
Welcome to the Breakfast Club. Nothing's as it seems, right?
You know, it's funny because you opened up the show. You said two words that I now despise. You said Mr. and you said Richardson.
Oh. Right.
Because I realized the true meaning of Mr. and I rule and Mrs. and I realized the true meaning of the surname, that legal name attached to what's called the Christian name or first name that actually puts us into all this trouble in the first place. Of course, Mr. is a flattering title, which is actually not so flattering. It actually means that you're controlled. So it's, you know, when I get asked these types of questions anymore, I'm very hesitant to answer. And I'm even hesitant nowadays to answer to any, to my admixed name. That's how wary I'm becoming of the legal system. So forgive me for that. But, you know, all I can say about my journey, which you're kind of getting me in sort of a peak, if you will, of that journey where I can now sort of see a lot and answer most questions that are thrown at me about how the system actually works, what is legal compared to the spiritual law and all that. But, you know, I was always in the wrong place at the right time. I was in New York for 9/11, watched it from my roof. I was on 11th Street, if anybody knows where that is, and it was closed from 14th Street down. I went to the store and found a line all the way, you know, all the way through the store and down one aisle, and I learned firsthand what it is to be dependent on others for my food and water supplies. And by the time I got through that line, there was nothing left. I learned the value of cash as opposed to gold or silver. No person in any working in any convenience store would, of course, accept gold or silver. And by the time they did or figured it out, all the supplies would have been gone. So I'm a big proponent of having cash as your main thing, a main form of, if you will, money, at least in the first aspects of all this talk about a collapse, you know, and then it'll be, you know, in my opinion, toilet paper will be more valuable than gold. I've experienced so many. I moved then, worked for the airlines during that time, so experienced that. I moved out to L.A. and became a sound engineer, experienced the whole Hollywood thing, found out the complete lie and satanic nature of Hollywood, Hollywood being the main plant used or tree used in witchcraft. Harry Potter's wand, of course, is made of Hollywood. So, you know, I've just been in a lot of different places at the right time and met a lot of different people that led me to this sort of journey to the point now where I have sort of mastered, you know, several subjects and also gotten to the point where I've come out of the alternative sort of media aspect of things, what we call the truth movement or the patriot movement and all that, recognize it as pure bullshit. Oh, pardon me, I don't know if I can say that word, and I'm now sort of someone who only focuses on what's called self-evident truth. In other words, you know, if you call me Clint Richardson, you'll have to prove that. But if you call me by my first name, my only highest quote-unquote Christian name, well, that's self-evident. I don't have to prove myself. And I found out that everything that's a lie, everything that's legal, everything that's fiction, actually has to be proven, whereas that which is of nature of reality is self-evident. It doesn't need to be proven. And so I always, you know, whenever anybody asks me a question, I always think about it. And it's the first thing I say is it a self-evident truth? Is it a creation of man's inventions and designs? And so that's kind of where I'm at. So it's a little difficult for me nowadays to basically not call BS on most of the stuff. BS on most of the stuff I hear around the way, especially the quote unquote patriot and truth movements, of which I was a very large part of until I realized what the word truth actually meant.
Right.
So hopefully that's a long answer for a simple question.
No, that was a great answer to that question because, first off, I have, you know, been a fan of your work for a long time, and I thank you for all the work you have done. I've had so many of those aha moments with these nuances that you have brought to light, especially when it comes to the language of a name and what these surnames mean. Especially when you start taking it to the next level where people like Dennis Fetcho go, where you go to the roots of this, you know, system predates, you know, these Western civilization things, and this is what it means. So you can go back even further with that. But I just want to say that when I say Mr. to you, it is an utmost Southern gentleman respect, sir, and that you should take no offense whatsoever.
Well, I'll just let you know why I say that. I understand completely that for the most part we say these things without conscious awareness of what we're actually saying, and that's the whole point of the legal realm. But Mr. actually, if you look it up in, say, Webster's 1828 dictionary, you'll find that it actually means loss, to occasion loss. It is something that means that you're less than your true substance. You've accepted some false aspect, title, whatever it is. So it's actually a degrading word, but we are trained, of course, to use these words as if they're good. And that's the whole point I'm trying to get across to people, is that we are in trouble not because we think we're using the wrong words, but because those words aren't our words. They're proprietary letters patent of government. And so we're speaking words that in almost all cases, legal words are the opposite to the common words that we're so familiar with and we use with respect and love and charity and hope and all that stuff. But we're using them in a legal jurisdiction, and therefore they are the ones, not us, that define the terms. And that's where everything gets all messed up. And so that's what I meant. I know that you meant respect, and I, you know, the same to you. It's just that the words, I'm so utterly aware now that it's really hard for me not to, you know, make the comments.
Right. Well, you know, I think you were one of the first people who explained to me in one of your articles, I can't remember which one, but on legal documents, how it's very different if your name appears in just the first letter capitalized of each word or if it's all caps, and that in the legal world, those are two totally different legal identities and legal fictions, as you said. So can you talk a little bit about that for the newbies who don't know that their name can, depending on how they write it, has different meanings?
So to be clear, and this is what my entire – I've got a three-volume workbook that I'm trying to get out. The first part is in editing right now, and it's going to be for free when I finally get it posted here. But you gotta go past the all caps thing before you look at the all caps thing. The all caps thing is sort of a fallacious thing that people use to show the difference between the intent of the name that's used. Remember that a name is actually the word that means noun, which is a person, place, or thing. So a person is always artificial. Whether you're talking about a natural or artificial person, meaning an individual or a corporation is always an artificial person. But the word natural in law means opposed to nature. So you have to remember that a legal term is always opposite to what you think, what you would normally consider as the normal meaning. So they call us as an insult. They call us naturals. Shakespeare used the word natural in a negative way because they're referring to us in our animal nature, or human nature, the unregenerate or uneducated, you know, sort of mass of illiterates. They call us naturals, so they call us a natural person in law. But remember, person is always, without exception, a status. It's a form without substance. And so any time that you use a full name, meaning an admixed name. So the Pope recently did a speech, and he said, and I quote as best as I can here, that the Christian name, which is your first name, the name your mother gave you, which is considered that God-given or unalienable name, by law, literally, the Pope was very clear. He said, you know, this is the head of the Holy See, the Vatican, right, which you know, all nations are basically a part of, he said, and all religions. He said, the first name belongs to God. The last name or surname belongs to the church. Now, anybody who knows anything about the Vatican knows that it's a city-state. It's not a religion in any kind of pure form. It's a legal entity. So to say that the name belongs to the church, which is the state, that's a very scary thing. So when you are born, you are basically attached. Your parents inform on you like you're a criminal. They certify your vital statistics into a birth certificate, which creates what's called a legal entity. And you become, as the man, the actual living man, you become the agent for service of process, which means that you have to have a federally registered address, which is your, you know, your home or your apartment or whatever. And so basically you are acting in an artificial person, a straw man, if you will. And so when you sign your name, you generally capitalize it because it's a proper noun or proper name. So it doesn't really matter how the courts have determined that no matter how that name is put forward, whether it's capitalized, uncapitalized, half capitalized, it is always going to be taken with the intent that it is used. If I'm going to court and I say I am Clint Richardson and I don't capitalize the name, they know that I am appearing in an artificial form without substance, that I am the agent, you know, for sure, for service of process, that is appearing in the court as the attorney or agent for that person, and that I am taking responsibility for it as its surety or bond. It's like invisible chains that you're bound to this legal identity that was created at your birth. So in form and function, the actual name that you're talking about when it comes to the all caps doesn't matter. When I'm specifically creating a contract, or I'm specifically using the name in various forms, yeah, then I would stick to the sort of general rules of conduct when it comes to the use of all caps, which you'll find on your driver's licenses and most contracts, etc. Usually it's an all caps name, which certainly signifies that it's a fiction, that it's not you but the person of government that you are bound in surety for. That means basically that you're in a performance debt. It's not a money debt. It's a performance debt where you actually must do and must obey the law of the person. The person is property of the lawmaker. And if for you to operate in that person and use its surname attached to your Christian name, you must therefore follow the law of the creator or God of that surname, which of course is government. Does that make sense?
Yes. And it's just fascinating because I also think about just the history of trying to figure out where in our development did we start getting these various types of names versus just one name, a tribal one name. And then, you know, the idea of a family name, and then taking it to the next level, which I think probably happened around the Copper Age, where you started associating a number with a name, and people were kept up with in number tallies. and the idea, you know, the development of the census of, you know, some state entity saying, I need to know how many people are here and who they are, and we're going to assign everybody a name, and, you know, just how that has developed in, you know, both our world history, but also, you know, these things, how they developed in the United States, that, you know, we moved from, you know, how contract law changed and the developments of things like the Social Security number associated with a birth certificate, somebody who was born in a hospital versus born in a home where the only record you needed was recording it in the family Bible. You know, so these kind of developments, do you ever think about that in those terms? Or
when you're recording a birth, a live birth in a family Bible, you're recording only the Christian name, because you're not the notion of the surname is pretty much assumed by government. They call it the cognomen or the agnomen. These are Latin terms, and they're biblical. I mean, so this system of pledging has been going on for 5,000 years. It's not anything new. Now, the modern techniques of the birth certificate are certainly new. The birth certificate came about in the 1800s, late 1800s, actually. So, I mean, that's a very modern thing. And people, of course, fallaciously say, well, it's only 100 years old or so, so how could this have been going on for thousands of years? And, you know, in my research and what my book actually explains in very, very horrifically detailed fashion, as I always do, is that let's see if I can say this. Basically, it goes back to the Bible. Actually, when Caesar said that all of the human race, basically, or the race of Adam, which is actually a bad thing. When all the common man must be taxed, you know, he laid the decree that all men must be taxed. Now, you read that, and you say, okay, he's charging us a tax. But see, we don't actually go and read what each word actually meant in the original transcriptions, the Greek, the Latin, and the Hebrew, or the Chaldean lexicon, Strong's Concordance, and all that stuff. We don't actually say, well, what does taxed mean? And it turns out that taxed, when Caesar taxed the entire people, tax actually means register. So when we're talking about being taxed by Caesar, and another word for Caesar is actually district, as in the District of Columbia or district of any nation jurisdiction, which seizure and Caesar are the same concepts, distress and distraint is what the word district actually means, distress, distraint, and seizure. So it's the domain of Caesar, if you will. It's you know, and I don't say this lightly. I don't say it as because it's poetic or it rhymes. I'm being serious. I'm being dead serious. When you read in the Bible that we were taxed, it means that's when they started registering and using the census to identify us. Now, what's really important about this concept of identity is that it's two words. And these two words are probably the most important understanding of this whole thing. If you're familiar with the concept, the Freudian concept of the id, the ego, and the superego, then you can understand exactly what we're going through with this naming process, because the name is actually the identity. The word identity is actually the id that is made into an entity. So you take the vital statistics of a child, the name, the address, as much information as you possibly get, you create a legal entity. And whether or not that child grows up and confirms and conforms to that identity, uses its numbers, uses its name, uses its benefits and its obligations, that is the confirmation and ratification process. That is the consent process. So that when you reach the age of adulthood, which actually means adultery, legalized adultery, then at that point you have, through your actions, which you would say your expressions or your consent, you've taken what was avoidable and you've made it unavoidable. You've operated as an agent, you've operated that person, that straw man, and therefore you're bound by all of the law that applies to that person or status, that straw man. And so what you're talking about is an identity or id entity, right? Two words that are put together to form a legal person, something that is not actually you, something that is the property of another that must follow a law that is not natural in any way, shape, or form. The legal law, and legal means opposed to nature or opposed to God. So we develop what, and this is where I'm at right now, which is very difficult for me, because I'm going through what I can only call ego death. Because now that I understand all this, I can safely say that in no way, shape, or form do I support that identity anymore. I don't want to be called Clint Richardson. My book is by Clint, not Clint Richardson. I'm a private man, not a fictional person. I don't want to be Mr. Anything. I don't want to be an admixed name of the church or state or whatever you want to call it. They're married, so it doesn't matter. What I'm trying to tell you is that we've all developed the ego. The ego is there to justify the id. The ego is always there to cause you to justify a false existence, to justify legal license. License is another word for anarchy, which means lawlessness. If I get a license to do something, it means I'm breaking the natural law. I don't need a license to do anything unless that thing is somehow illegal otherwise. So a license is permission to do something which is otherwise unlawful or illegal. So my ego, my whole life, my public education, my entertainment, my university studies, my everything, everything is based on building up my ego from childhood, from my first comprehension, so that I'm always continuously trying to justify my legal existence, my false identity, my reputation, my numbers, my marks, my signature, everything that I do in person as basically a voluntary subject or slave of government, a 14th Amendment citizen or whatever nation you're in. What I'm doing is through my ego, I'm justifying the fact that I am literally a goyim, which is basically a slave of the nobility. Okay. That is what I am doing. That is the whole system is based around building up that ego, that false identity, so that you're always justifying doing wrong and harming and injuring others, never taking responsibility for yourself. And this is what it's all about, self. If you go back to your self-evidence, what you are without any titles, without any names, without any numbers, without any marks, then you are free. Until that point, I don't care who you have on this show and what they say, there is no freedom while you're under a name or flattering title or number, property of another. Period. Story.
Now, how does the superego fit into that legal identity model?
The superego, I remember actually writing about it, but I actually can't. I'm going to have to look it up, because I can't remember what I ended up saying about the superego. It's been so long since I wrote about that, sorry. It's really just an example or a model just to show you what the ego is, what it's birthed from, and that it's a justification of the id or the id entity, that false identity.
Right. And, Freud was obsessed with this. And since we realized that basically Freud was trying to take the Talmud and apply the scientific method to it to come up with, what he had as his model with the id, the superego, and the ego, and all his other things. Just like, to me, Marx, took the Talmud and applied economic theory to it. And that gave us, Marxist capitalism and, his entire economic model, because it's very, very Talmudic. He was just trying to, take this Talmudic system and apply an economic model to it to morph it into Marxism. And so I just think that Freud did that with his, you know, id, ego, and superego model, and that you said, you know, that development of the ego as, you know, basically a goyim. Because that's when I immediately, when you said that, that, you know, that's what I thought of the superego as the masterclass system, the, you know, over system that is, keeps, you know, modifying your behavior, you know, with good, bad feedback, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, you know, whatever you call it, whether it's the economic system, the system of money, whatever you want to call it, it all stems back to the word mammon. Usury, of course, there's only one religion, quote unquote, that supports, you know, usury. And we, you know, you just said what that was, Judaism. But not the form of Judaism that's spoken of, you know, in the early times. We have a misconception of what Christianity is and what Judaism is. There's always, as with every word, there's always two meanings to the word. You have Christian title, and you have those who act actually as Christ. Those who, which is rare and few and far between, those actually walking the path and expressing religion through their actions, as opposed to just going to church for show, speaking in groups, which the Bible tells you not to do. You know, we all go and we say go to church, and we sit there and we chant the Lord's Prayer when the verse before the Lord's Prayer says never pray in groups. Mm-hmm. Right? So we do nothing of what the Bible says, because the priest is a creation, a legal creation of government. It's an office. It's a flattering title. Christian is a flattering title. What people don't understand, and this is probably, if I were to express one thing today that I really want people to understand, because we've been taught and trained to despise the Bible, to throw it out with the bathwater, which is the church. We despise the church, and somehow we connect the church with the Bible, even though the Bible's against churches, even though the Bible's against the state and the nations. We somehow attach the Bible. We don't realize that the Bible is actually the law. Now, the Bible is part of the common law, and this is very, 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 very important, because all those quotes that you hear from the quote-unquote founding fathers, which all but I think two of them were Master Masons, all of those quotes about liberty and freedom, they go out the window without the common law, without the Bible. All right? So Bible is, according to many dictionaries, according to many sources in law, the very foundation of the common law. So if you go down to the very, very foundational root of the law in England, in America, any place that has that English version or whatever it is of common law, you will find out that the Bible is an unwritten part of the common law. Now, what's the most important thing about the Bible and about man's law, which are completely opposed to each other, the legal law, is that element of choice. Now, if you choose to fulfill your false destiny and keep contracting in the name of the state, in the name of Caesar, your surname admixed with your Christian name, then you have abandoned God, you've abandoned the law of nature, you've abandoned your unalienable rights, and you are a subject of government, a subject, if you will, of the matrix, the fiction, the legal matrix, right? Matrix has a very important meaning that, of course, the Jews who made the Matrix movie never expressed to you, and it's actually the creation of a legal document. It's the first or original legal document that is created, to which all other copies must be created. That's your birth certificate. Your birth certificate literally is the Matrix. They're not going to tell you that, of course. Those well, I think they're both female now somehow.
Yeah, I heard that they made the switch. Yeah, so.
So you're talking about a completely corrupted script when you're talking about the movie, as opposed to what it actually is. This concept of the Matrix, and that's what we're all living in, is this legal lie.
Right.
So again, what is the Matrix? It's the first or original copy. Production of a legal instrument, which all other copies must be made from. That is literally your birth certificate. So the creation of the legal entity is not bound in, you're not bound in any way to be a part of that, but you confirm and ratify it through your expressions, through your actions. Again, the first time you sign your signature, and again, we have to break apart these words. What does signature mean? You know, most people think I'm full of crap when I tell them this, but sig, the word sig, S-I-G is actually an old Saxon word. If you look at the etymology or in any, well, in old dictionaries anyway, the word sig actually means victory. And so if I give my signature in the name of another as a surety for it, ensuring its performance, it's actually victory over nature, sig nature. Because I'm acting in person or per the sun. What does the word goyim actually mean? It means citizenship. It means to be part of a nation, to be born not in blood but in fiction. That's your legal strawman, and that's your person. So a goyim is simply anyone who is part of a nation. Now, what we don't understand out here is that the nation was created by the private people, the landholders of each state. Their representatives, which we call the quote-unquote founding fathers. They founded that legal corporation called the United States, that district of Caesar. Meanwhile, they stayed private. They withheld all their rights, which is why they're protected by the Constitution, or what you would call the negative effect of the Constitution, which says government can't do this, government can't do that. But government can do what the hell it wishes to do with its own creation. What is its own creation? Every public person or citizenship out there. We're the sons of the nation. We have no blood. We're tainted, corrupted. We're in attainder. The whole system of law when it comes to land has to do with blood. And if you don't show your genealogy and express or bear your arms, which means genealogy, arms is a word that's capitalized in the Constitution, and therefore it's a proper noun referring to the bloodline, the family, the posterity of the founding fathers, which is their bloodline. I mean, let's face it, anytime you create a corporation, who are you going to leave it to? Everyone in the world? Or all the common people? Or are you going to leave it to your family? Your sons, your daughters. You're not going to leave it to all men, right? So, you know, we have so many illusions, we're in a grand delusion, the strong delusion, as the Bible says. And we're in that delusion because we're continuously parroting each other's crap. We're continuously not going to the source information, finding out what words actually mean, finding out, for instance, reading the Federal Reserve Act to find out that everything that's said about the Federal Reserve, including the fact that it's not federal, is just absolutely complete bull. So that's where we're at.
Right. Okay, three dots for you. Taxation from Caesar. Tithing by Abraham, compound interest from Rothschild. Go.
Well, so, you know, your compound interest was it Franklin, I think, that said that the entirety of the revolution, quote unquote, was fought because of interest or usury, because of the central bank. The idea behind usury or interest or compound interest is to create a situation where there's never enough money to pay back the debt, and thus you have a perpetual debt. I think we're all kind of familiar with that notion. But in the colonies, which were fully funded, and you know, when the colonists were here, you know, I have all kinds of quotes that say, and you know, even congressional or governmental acts of the colonies that are very clear that the King of England was their God and that all of their natural and civil rights came from that God. This was a very, very, very well understood and well known fact that all your rights came from the King or the sovereign, right? We're still under that same system. It's just that the sovereign is now called this mythical the people, which is, again, a reference to that sovereignty of each private or several state. But remember, we're not in the States. We're in the nation. We're in this big jurisdiction of fiction, and thus everything we do has nothing to do with the notion of the Declaration of Independence, for instance. Has everything to do with man, not persons. If you go into the fiction, you can't claim God. You can't claim you're a creation of God or Jehovah. You can only claim a creation or a person of government, of the people. So again, a goyim is to be born in the nation. It's the general populace. It's the what they call the mass of illiterates. That's what we are. We speak a form of Latin that they call English or dog Latin. And therefore, everything we say as four-footed beasts is pretty much opposed to what we intend. This is called dog Latin. You can look it up in Black's Law 4th and other sources. So when it came to the colonies, their greatest defeat, their greatest tyranny that was coming from their god, their king, was the fact that they had to pay the English the crap. Corporation, they had to pay it in English specie or coin. They couldn't pay it with anything else. Well, how do you possibly get English specie, the specie of the Central Bank of England, if you have no gold mines and you have no way to produce your own money? You have to somehow work for the king in order to, grab and then repay his specie. So that was the main problem. That's our problem today. We can't create our own money, although there's plenty of places who have private money. Over 100 cities in the USA have their own currencies that are respected only in their, amongst those people. And as long as they don't call it a dollar or compete with the dollar, everything's just fine.
Yeah, we have the plenty here in North Carolina and Chapel Hill area. I don't know if you ever heard of the plenty system.
Yeah, but you can't go to the next county over, likely, and use that.
Exactly.
That is what will actually free a people, is to get off the money system. That is what America really was, those Christian people were trying to do, is follow the Bible, which says no, absolutely under no circumstances, no usury, no interest, right? But how do you do that when you're under the king? So, and then, of course, we created our own central bank just 2 years after our illustrious Constitution, which, don't even get me started on the Constitution.
Okay, we've got 20 minutes to go through the next 9 questions, so we're going to have to pop these out. This has been so fascinating. I've really enjoyed this. Question 2, where are you? That was a good who are you. I think that was the best who are you yet.
I am in a place that is often called Utah. I like to say that I'm around but not in the Salt Lake area of Utah.
Okay. Question 3. What are you?
I think we covered that. I am self-evident, and the proper way to say that is simply and only I am. In other words, I exist. My voice proves that. You don't need any other evidence.
Right. One of the things in an early version of my work on the Trading Post, the tagline was, "I'm here, therefore I have a right to be here." And that was the way I phrased it. It's just, because you're here, you have a, axiomatic definition. If you're here, you've got a right to be here, according to my model,
It's real simple. Anything that you add to the word I am is fiction. It's a flattering title. It's a functionality that has nothing to do with reality or nature. It's something that you tell somebody to show them that you are something you are not. If I tell you I'm a doctor, you're probably going to trust me, even though doctors are the number one killer of all people around the world. And so you trust me because I tell you I am a doctor. I wear a white coat, right? But why would you trust someone just because they have a flattering title? So, again, I am. That's the answer.
Good answer. Question 4. When are you?
Well, one of the things I've discovered is that the notion of God, or what's the proper translation, is Jehovah, but you have to understand that the word God in the Bible is translated from many words, including archons, theos, Elohim, which means is a plural for gods. So every time the word God is mentioned in the Bible, very seldom is it actually referring to that notion of Jehovah. Jehovah is actually a verb. So God, technically, the omnipotent concept, is actually a verb. It's all that is in being. It is timelessness. It is pricelessness. All life, in other words, the whole concept of legalism is to put a monetary value or mammon upon it and consider it, including other men, as in only their valuation in money. You got to understand that money can be valued anything can be valued in money, but money never has an actual value. So you look at everything, you're valuating it in money, which means you're making it literally worthless instead of priceless, because money has no actual value. It's only what you believe it to be. So the system of control is to degrade us into the point that we consider ourselves only by our monetary value. How much am I worth? How much wage can I earn in my slave job working for another? You know, that's the reality of that. The question was again,
when are you?
When are you? I am now.
Yeah. One of the things that you said, that one of my big influences as a young engineer was a gentleman by the name of Buckminster Fuller, or Bucky Fuller, and he always posited the question, what if God is a verb, not a noun? And I always thought that was just a wonderful way of looking at things, is, you know, God is a verb, not a noun.
If you actually read and do your due diligence, you'll find that that is actually a true statement. That was the original quote-unquote name, if you will, the name that it's funny, they wouldn't say the actual name. But the notion was that it's a verb, which is the permanence of all existence. So if you consider the notion of a frequency, for instance, the Schumann resonance or a cymatics or whatever it's called, where each perfect harmonious frequency in a sine wave or a single wave without the harmonics produces on a metal plate, it'll produce a beautiful form or shape, a snowflake, and that's harmony. But as soon as you get out of harmony, then the sand that's on the plate will actually dissipate and get all messy until it reaches the next perfection of harmony on the scale of nature, if you will, and it'll form a different snowflake. It's fascinating. It's called cymatics, I think, if you look that up on YouTube.
Yeah, I always loved that when I was studying harmonics in school. Yeah. And, you know, you take it up to the next harmonic and the pattern would shift. You know?
So that is God. That is the very limited visual description of God. You're seeing. So, in other words, whatever we do to try to improve upon that perfection, that harmony, eventually it's going to go back to its frank. It's going to naturally go back. So whatever we try to perfect is always artificial. It's always an art form. It's always a painting of the real. It's a matrix again. It's never. We don't act in harmony with our nature. If we did, we'd have such abundance and such love and beauty and charity and no money and no legal fictions and no names and no titles, and we would be at one with nature. And that's the actual definition of the Jewish, quote, the true Jewish definition in the Old Testament of Jehovah, which is a oneness of being, or the existence, the existing one, to be accurate. And when you look at the word Jesus Christ in the Bible, in the concordance, all the names in the Bible weren't men, they were actually personifications of concepts. And so Jesus Christ actually means, in its word, it means Jehovah is salvation. And many times, Christ personified, is the personified word of God, the word son and word and law, are all the same. So the law or son of God, as personified, says, hey, don't worship me. I'm just the messenger. I'm just here to show you an example of how to walk in the footsteps of God, how to actually be in harmony with nature. That is God. That is Jehovah. If you understand that, you're way ahead of the game. And that means that all these churches, especially the Catholic Church, unfortunately, which they call Catholic means universal, it means they're all false. Mm-hmm. They're all preaching something to make themselves gods. And the Pope, of course, claims to be the vicar or replacement or anti-Christ, the instead of Christ.
Okay, question five. We've got 12 minutes. Why are you?
That is an unanswerable. That would go back to because the harmony of the universe decided it was time for me. I'd like to think that I'm here to make a difference, but, you know, I've come to the conclusion and the serious self-evident truth that we can only change ourselves and show others how to do the same. So if that's why I'm here, then that's why. But I would not presume to make a guess onto why I am here. I can only do what I think I'm supposed to do.
All right. Question six. Which way are you going?
Yes.
Is that your final answer with yes?
Yes.
Okay. Question seven. How will you go?
That's an interesting question. Because there is nothing preventing me from going wherever I like, except fictional borders. Borders that don't exist in reality but somehow show up on a map. Borders that were created by dead people long ago that we still respect as legally binding. We'll even keep people outside of our quote-unquote borders while we pretend to be something we're not in our flattering titles, in our citizenships, our vessels, while others suffer. My answer, and what I found is that this is what is the cure? What is the solution? Which means end of contract, by the way. Anytime anybody asks me the solution, I say there's only one, and that's the legal meaning, which is end of contract, or end of binding relationship, which is what citizenship is. I found out that the cure for all this legal shit, pardon me, is charity. If you're acting in the purest form of charity, which means everything that you do is to benefit others or support the wealth of others, not yourself. If everything you do is a charitable action and you never expect anything in return, then there is no border that can stop you. That is my, path, my message that eventually I seek to fulfill. And so how am I going to get wherever I want to go? That's how.
I just had this funny, wacky Wednesday image when you said the solution. Now say it again. The solution is the dissolve of the contract.
End of contract, whatever that, a contract, the only way you can have dis-ease, to not be at ease, is to contract that disease. You want to be cured of the dis-ease? Well, end the contract. That's your only solution. Otherwise, right. You know, you can find remedy. You can get money, mammon, and, you know, if someone kills your wife, well, maybe they'll have to pay you $1 million.
Yeah.
That's not a solution. That's just a legal remedy. You want the solution.
Well, I just wonder, you know, in this comical vision, you know, draw a cartoon of, are we just going to have to, like, buy our servitude out from the Jews? Say, okay, BB, give us a number, and then we have a big telethon and just buy ourselves out. You know, it's like, so, can we end the contract here?
I don't know how much of a statement that is, because right now all the Jews are buying up all the debt they can because they know the debt is going to be forgiven. That's the whole idea of a jubilee.
Mm-hmm.
You have major players out there talking about that right now, the Jubilee, literally. The Pope even declared Jubilee, which began in December and will end in December of this year. It's the year of mercy or Jubilee. So you don't know how accurate you are. And the story in the Bible of that is basically that all the people who saw or could see that the whole system was crashing way back when, they took all their gold and they created a golden calf. And when the new system came around, they traded in that golden calf for the new money, the new system, the new mammon, and regained their status within that new tyrannical legal system. And that is exactly what we're all being told to do. Go buy your gold, keep it, hold on to it as a hedge against the collapse of the dollar. And then when the new system, global system of a cashless society comes around, you can trade it in and you can have your little mark, your little sign that shows that you're a good little citizen and you always have been, and you're going to buy yourself, you're going to trade in your golden calf, your sacrifice, and you're going to take the mark of the beast. That's
the new system.
That's how it works, man.
Okay. Question 8. Who will go with you?
The Bible calls it the remainder or the remnant. Those who choose to act under the natural law, which is also called the law of God or the scriptural law. Again, the common law, part of the common law. Those who make the choice to live under the highest moral compass and law, that's who will go with me.
Good answer. Okay, and question 9 of the big 9 at 9. Again, now should I just say Clint? Is that how I should address you? We're here with Clint.
Would appreciate the effort, yes. That would be okay. the ultimate sign of respect.
Okay, so Clint, answer our question 9. What do you do in case of a meanie attack?
Well, I'd always heard around the way in Sunday school and everything else that I'm to love my enemies. And I never really understood what that actually meant. And I know that most people are meanies because they're desperate. They want to lash out. They want to steal your energy for that temporary fix, that feel-good notion that you've just harmed somebody and you got one over on them, but it goes by so quick, it disappears. The darkness becomes a temporary light and then goes back to darkness and you have to do it again. So I know that bullies are just spiritually dead inside, and I'd like to change that. But I figured out that, you know, I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to correct them, and if they listen, they listen. If they don't, they don't. But most importantly, I'm going to love them, not as the person or the flattering title they are pretending to be, the bully or the meanie, but I'm going to love them for their self-evidence, for what they truly are, the creations of God, if you will, their natural self. And I'm going to forgive them for their meanness, because it's not natural. It's a product of an artificial life and an artificial legal matrix, a society that forces us to compete against each other and harm one another legally with license. And so I'm going to forgive. And so I realized that to love my enemy is to love the man and hate the fiction he subscribes to, hate the titles, hate the name, hate everything that is artificial, but love the man. You still there? Did I lose you?
Are you there?
I am here.
Oh, okay. I was muted. I didn't want to interrupt you while you were talking. I just want to iterate again just how wonderful it has been having you on the show tonight. I have had such a great time talking to you. I hope the crew enjoyed it as much as I did. I wish it could go on for 3 more hours because I'm sitting here. You have to come back because I've got a zillion other questions. You know, once we get past the basic big 9 at 9, then we get to the bigger 9 at 9. And so then we can come and talk more about your work. But tell everybody about your book and the websites where we can get you. And also Skype me all your website information, et cetera, so I can put it on the show page. So that sure. I can find you. So tell us about the book and your webpage real quick. We got about 2 more minutes.
So the book, when I post it, I'll post it at a website. It's strawmanstory.info, and it's just .info. Strawmanstory.info. It will be free for download. I had to make it free because I have to practice what I preach. It has to be given in charity, and then I'll be, you know, putting it into book form, and anybody that wants that, you know, there's a donation, or what's actually the proper term is gift, and we'll exchange gifts just to cover my costs. But I'm not doing this to make a money. You don't make money self, quote unquote, self-publishing. I'm doing this to educate my in pure love and charity, my fellow man, because we're at the point where we're about to die. I mean, we're dead. We're dead. We've reached the point of no return in technology, which means art. We're dying. We're being literally evolved by scientists. Literally. My other websites. My blog is Reality Blogger. Blogger has one G. Realityblogger.wordpress.com. And the movies, the documentaries that I made in the past are at thecorporationnation.com.
All right. And like I said, I'll be posting this on the show page just as soon as you get me those links. And once again, thank you so much, Clint, for being with us. I hope you'll come back and not be a stranger at the Trading Post here. And I hope you have a wonderful, wacky Wednesday, sir. Slip that in there.
All righty, man. Take care.
All right, well, that is the show for this evening, and I'd like to thank everyone again for coming out and joining us. Thank Mr. Clint again for coming on for the Big 9 at 9, and until next time, I will see you at the rendezvous.